Hey all, welcome to Soap from the Box. It's the last week, week 15. I cannot believe it. We have a very special episode for you. The other one, this one is very special as well, but the other one is with a national TV treasure. This one is someone I've just recently watched in It's a Sin. He's a lovely guy, so enjoy this. Okay, my next guest won Soap Villain of the Year at the 2009 British Soap Awards, plays a major role in the amazing Russell T Davies drama It's a Sin, and is described by his agent as having a warm and sincere voice with natural gravitas. Please welcome Nathan Sussex. Hello, Nathan.
Well, hello.
I know, there's the voice, you see, there's the voice. I have to say, actually, I come from Sussex, so I feel like this affiliation with you anyway, with the surname.
Oh, what a connection.
What a connection, I know. And we've never met, but I already feel like we know each other just speaking quickly. But this is why I just texted you a couple of tongue twisters to give me your best voiceover voice. So it is, to begin to toboggan, first buy a toboggan, but don't buy too big a toboggan. Too big a toboggan is too big a toboggan to buy to begin to toboggan. So yeah, give me right. your best warm and sincere voice with natural gravitas.
I'll give it my best shot. Right. Okay. Here we go.
People listening to give you jobs.
Okay. Here it is. To begin to toboggan, first buy a toboggan, but don't buy too big a toboggan. Too big a toboggan is too big a toboggan to buy a toboggan. Oh, see, I fell at the first turn.
You nearly got there. But still, it's a great voice. And voiceovers are all the rage at the moment, as we know, in lockdown. But listen, so we normally start on the podcast with the soap stuff, but I thought with you, and because it's everyone's probably still binge watching it as we speak, we'll start with It's a Sin. I watched three episodes of last night, and I still have to say I'm still emotionally what a show. I mean, it's incredible, amazing to be part of that show.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, I mean, it seems such a long time ago since we filmed it, because of course we filmed it pre-lockdown back in 2019. But phenomenal. I mean, the reaction has been incredible. I expected that, because it's Russell T Davies.
Exactly. And what a genius. I mean, he's one of those people that everything, if no one has watched it, which I'm sure everyone has, but I'll just tell everyone. So it's a five-part series set from 1981 to 1991 in London, following a group of friends whose lives were turned upside down by HIV and AIDS. You play Pete Burrows. The other cast includes Ollie Alexandra from Years and Years, Keely Hawes, who's one of my favourite people on earth, Neil Patrick Harris and Stephen Fry. It's going out, obviously, on Channel 4 and HBO in America very soon, or it might be on when this podcast goes on. And it was originally called Boys, wasn't it, I think? I'm right in saying.
That's right, yeah.
It's changed, yeah. And I think what I love about it is obviously because Russell wrote Queer as Folk, which we'll talk about as well, because what an astounding program. But that was almost like a celebration of the gay urban life then. And this is kind of showing the darkness of kind of the freedom that the boys had in that. And I think, I mean, I read my friend's message on Facebook the other day saying it's so nice that the teens now have something new to kind of, it's like their version of something that they can cling on to locked in their room, you know, if they haven't come out. Did you feel like when you were making something really special?
Yeah, totally. I mean, as soon as when my agent called and said they want to see you for, at the time it was called Boys, and I was like, yeah, of course, and went straight to London and read for a part. But of course, anything with Russell T Davies on, you know, is going to be a massive hit and a massive success. But particularly with this story, because I think it's really important that sort of gay history is talked about, because you know, there's a generation of young gays today, anyone in the LGBT community that, you know, may not know much about the history of being gay. And of course, it's bringing it to the forefront again, and it's allowing people to discuss it, which I think is amazing.
I think I was still astounded when I watched it last night, because obviously I was a bit too young, you know, when AIDS and HIV came about, but very aware of it. You know, at university, I remember we did a whole film about, they were called Food Chain, and they delivered meals to people suffering from HIV and AIDS. But yeah, I found it when I watched it again, how little was known in the country and how slow the country was to catch up with what was happening. I mean, because it was seen as, you know, gay, as we know then, gay history was very different and gays weren't accepted. You know, it's incredible to think that it got allowed to be like it was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you just said, I mean, like you, I was very, very, very young.
We were so young.
Oh, gosh, yes, yeah. But no, I do remember, because I think the series starts in 1981, and I was around 10 or 11, I think. But I do remember, the adverts that going out, and I remember the Don't Die of Ignorance tagline, the Who Can Forget the Tombstone advert in the 80s.
Yes.
And of course, although I was so young, the fear was there, and I grew up in a little small Welsh town in Powys, in Crickhowell. So, of course, that nothing like that was in our town, or we thought. I remember people saying, you can catch it from a toilet seat, you can catch it from kissing someone. It was awful because nobody knew about this disease, but a certain community was being targeted, you know?
It was, yeah. And I think what's so powerful in the programme is just, I mean, funnily enough, there's a Welsh character, obviously, isn't there, coming from that
school. Yeah.
I don't want to give away anything, but I'd kind of guess one of the twists about what was going to happen to him. And I just think, I mean, working with that cast, because obviously a lot of them are really young, Ollie Alexander. So yeah. I mean, it must have been very all new to them, I suppose. They must have been learning this whole amazing history as they filmed.
Absolutely. I mean, luckily for me, I was there from day one of the shoot, and it was lovely to be able to gel with the cast, because our very first scene we did was when my character was handing out flyers in the pub.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was a really big day. It was everyone's first day on set, and it was just lovely to be around them. And also when we were taken off set, so Peter Hoare, the director, because they are of a certain age, and they're far too young to remember back in the 80s. Well, half of them weren't born, I don't think. So he was talking to them about doing, you know, whatever research they were doing, and he was pointing them to, I think there was a Horizon documentary on BBC Two at the time, which I vaguely remember. And I was able to throw in a few sort of little anecdotes about growing up in the 80s and remembering all that. So it was really interesting because a lot of these actors, they were just amazed at the treatment that, you know, gay people suffered during that sort of epidemic. And they were completely shocked because even though the cast, most of the cast were from the LGBT community, their way of life is completely different to what it was back in the 80s.
Oh, totally. I think we forget how lucky we are being gay in this era, you know, and it's not,
yeah.
Even though it's 30 years ago, it still feels not that long ago for things to be so different.
Yeah, totally.
And so when you play Pete Burrows, who's an activist who works on the gay switchboard and is trying to educate and raise awareness.
Yeah.
It's lucky, I suppose, you filmed it before lockdown because of the intimate scene. Yeah. It would have been a nightmare. But did you watch, I mean, you must have watched Queer as Folk when that was out years ago.
I did. I mean, and interestingly enough, back when that came out in 90, I can't remember, 90 something, wasn't it? I was actually straight back then. So it was, I watched it for different reasons.
Right. So I was as well. I was at university and I was straight and I watched it.
Yeah.
Watched it thinking, oh, well, it was very shocking at the time because there'd never been things or anything like that on.
Yeah.
And I do remember just thinking, wow, this is groundbreaking. This is amazing to because I got educated, because that's what I think we turn a blind eye to things unless they really affect us. So, you know, that was kind of really in your face.
Yeah.
I mean, things actually quite calm compared to Queer as Folk in a way.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I remember when Queer as Folk came out, fast forward into It's a Sin, and obviously I'm in a different position now. It was quite liberating watching It's a Sin because and it's hard to compare It's a Sin to Queer as Folk because I think they're two very different stories.
Very different. Yeah, yeah.
But it was just really relaxing and liberating just watching it, that I was watching it now as a gay man. But that was really interesting, the two sort of parallels.
And I think what's really great now is I've seen messages like people watching it with their kids, you know, probably not the sex scenes, although there's not many. But I like the fact that parents, you know, again, that's totally changed. I'm sure years ago people were locking, like I said, locking themselves in the rear. It wasn't really something because it was a different, you know, when Queer as Folk was on, there was still a different mindset than there is now. So it's amazing he's been able to kind of cross all those boundaries. But how did it, so filming wise, because obviously we know soap is filmed all out of order, was it the same on that? Were you kind of, was it here, there and everywhere, those five episodes?
Yeah, day one was, I think we were filming parts of episode two on day one. So it wasn't in chronological order, which is what you're used to on set anyway, as you know. And you kind of jumping in and out of different, so it's difficult sometimes because you've got to ask yourself, oh God, where am I now? What am I doing? But they, you know, they it had a real flow to it, and you know, it was sort of because we were on they had a really short shoot. I think it was like 2 months or just under 3 months shoot. And I was in and out because I was booked for 5 or 6 days. So I'd do a day or so, and then I'd go back and join them in like 2 or 3 weeks time. And so I was in and out, and it was just interesting to see how far they'd come while I'd been gone away, you know?
And then Ollie, I think, is a revelation, isn't he? I mean, yeah. He's incredible in it. I love when you see someone on screen that you go, oh my God, what a revelation to find that person.
Yeah, because I do you know what? Because obviously I know Ollie Alexander from being in the band, but I didn't realise he had quite sort of an acting CV behind him, because he had done a few things before It's a Sin. And I was amazed at, yeah, and I mean, I was amazed on set, like how he was so comfortable in front of the camera, and he just took, you know, he was like a natural, like he'd been doing it all his life.
Doing, as we know, doing anything intimate in front of television cameras is,
yeah,
uncomfortable. So to do a part like that, I mean, I think all hats off to him. And I was going to ask you that, because it was set in the 80s, do you know, did they close off streets and stuff? Because obviously the New York stuff was, you know, I was, yeah, like, they filmed that.
I wasn't, because most of my shots were interiors, but I do believe they closed off a lot of the streets around Manchester. I mean, it was incredible how they turned. I'm not sure if they filmed that section in Manchester or Liverpool, actually, but most of it was Manchester. But to turn a street up the north into a New York street scene was incredible.
Ah, right. Oh, so they filmed the New York stuff in Manchester. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Most
brilliant.
Of it was Manchester. I think even on the ferry scenes, that was across the Mersey.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. I mean, filming in London, as we know, or yeah, New York. I was really thinking, God, they must have spent an absolute fortune. But so how did you come across? Because obviously we'll get to Hollyoaks. You'd left Hollyoaks. How did that dream role kind of come about? Had you worked with Russell or knew Russell or?
I kind of knew Russell from afar. So we were, I think I was on his radar through Hollyoaks. But I'd been in Torchwood years and years ago. I was in season 3.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if he was running the show at that point, because he started the show off. But I got, like anyone else, my agent called, got an audition. And then I got offered the part of Pete. So I messaged Russ and I said, oh my God, I've just been offered this role in Boys at the time. And I said, I'm just so excited and amazed. Thank you so much if you made that happen. And he was thrilled, because he said, I was dying to tell you, but obviously I couldn't, because we had to wait for contracts to go through and all that. But we speak quite a bit on Instagram, and he's really lovely. Like, I feel like I've known him for years.
Yeah, well, everyone, I know Jonathan Harvey, the writer, says he's one of the nicest writers. He's always praising other people's work and stuff.
Oh, he does. And he's so kind, and he's just so gracious, and he's so supportive. Like, he really does get the best out of everyone. And
Did he come to set a lot?
He was, yeah. I mean, yeah. The times I was up there, he was really hands-on. Like, he was always watching on the monitors. He wasn't there all the time, but he'd come in and maybe give a few notes, or he'd boost morale a bit. So he was trying to, you know, make everything, you know, because obviously they're playing 5 really close friends, so it was getting that sort of pitching that right and not making it too sort of friendly but believable, you know. And yeah, he was just giving great advice.
And I think that's great, because as we know from soap, and there would be no way the writers come on set. I think it's a real difference when writers, you know, everyone knows friends, the writers are always there making changes and stuff. I think when it's someone's baby, it makes such a difference, doesn't it? I mean, probably saying that as a director is also a nightmare, probably, because you're it's another person to argue with. But I mean, someone like him, obviously, my God, to do anything. But and then what I kind of found quite funny in the film is, obviously, Keely Hawes plays the mum of Ollie, and there's a huge discussion just about the fact he wants to be an actor, which I always love when things are like that. There's actors acting out these scenes about not wanting to be an actor. So, I mean, for you, was it something that was discussed in Wales? You know, because obviously that probably wasn't the acting hub of the, you know, the world. But when you were younger, was it a decision you made early that you wanted to act?
Yeah, I mean, I knew from an early age I wanted to be an actor. I mean, God, as far as going like early primary school, I just love performing. I love being involved in the school plays. And when I went to high school, and where I went to high school, it was a really small Welsh rural town. And the dramas class was a very small, I think there was about six of us in drama because no one ever took drama.
Right.
And it wasn't a career that you could follow because I remember sitting down with a careers advisor. Oh, have a look at this. This is a drama teacher. And they were always trying to push you into something else.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But I didn't go to drama school till I was 21. So I worked a lot. So I got a bit of life experience first. But coming from a very rural town, it wasn't a career path that you were pushed into.
And when you eventually went to drama school, was that down in London?
Yeah, yeah. So I auditioned for a couple of schools, not many. Because it was also difficult as well because I didn't have much confidence in my sort of late teens, early 20s. And I found it really hard to muster the courage to do it. And when I got into a drama school, I mean, literally, and this is why I think drama is amazing for schools. It's amazing for kids. Is my confidence just shot through the roof because I was in a new city. I was living on my own. I was training with strangers and it was just incredible.
I think there's a big thing about, I think a lot of actors, I used to act a lot when I was younger as well. I think a lot of actors are in real life. They're actually quite placid and quite quiet normally.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that because I went to London as this small little country Welsh boy. And I came back to Wales, you know, I was this city slicker. I was outspoken. And honestly, that and drama did that, you know, just and being around people, you know, at the time of my life.
So, right, while we're still on It's a Sin, I'm just going to give you a little game. So it's whether these things you think are a sin, okay? So eating leftover curry for breakfast from a takeaway.
That is not a sin.
That's not a sin. Yes, good answer. That's the right answer. I always do that. Okay, so going all the way on a first date.
Definitely not a sin.
Yeah. I quite like actually a couple of, I like in It's a Sin. He's really managed to, over those five friends, you get the whole remit of people. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of you get everyone. Okay, so sweet and salty popcorn mixed together.
I wouldn't say that's a sin because that's what I like that.
Yeah, no, I like that as well. An M People concert.
M People concert.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that's not a sin because I do love a bit of M People.
Good. Yeah. See, this is just a test basically if we're going to be friends.
Yeah. I'm just filthy then.
And then winning sexiest male or female at the Soap Awards.
Oh, it's up there with not a sin. That's number one. I'd take that.
I think that's a bit of a sin. I think the award's a bit of a sin just because I think it takes us back a bit. And I do think there's something highly embarrassing about people who've won sexiest male. You know, like I know Michelle Keegan, obviously, from Corrie, and it used to make her, you know, fill with dread the idea that she was going to win again. Because it's one of those awards you go up and it's like, what do you say, really? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I noticed they've stopped doing those categories now. And I actually quite love them. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm just
weird. But it used to always be. I remember someone from Hollyoaks won one year and did a proper big speech. And it was quite embarrassing, like thanking his mum and dad and stuff. And it's like, oh, my God. I know. Take it really seriously. But I suppose, you know, yeah, I suppose you do.
I mean, I am gutted I didn't get best bitch. But, hey, you can't have everything.
So that takes us neatly to Hollyoaks, which obviously, let's very smooth this. So you were famous in Hollyoaks, obviously, for playing Buster Smith between January 2018 and January 2019, returning last year in September. Yeah. And it is a really serious note. You played a predatory paedophile who groomed young boys. You were coaching, you were a football coach. So obviously a really heavy story because you were a character basically to go in with a purpose, you know, which is great. Yeah. You weren't involved in too much of the, you know, peripheral other stuff. So did you know that what the story was going to entail when you took the job?
No. Well, at audition stage, no. They gave me very little information. So it was really difficult because you didn't know how to go in there and approach it. Right, yeah. It wasn't until my first day when I started, Brian, the exec producer, we had this massive big table meeting with the writers, the producers, and they gave me the full story arc of Buster and the family tree of where I was going to be placed and exactly what I'd be doing. So it wasn't until that day did I realize he was going to be this groomer. And I just jumped at it. I absolutely loved it. I mean, it's an awful thing to portray, but
a great thing to bring awareness of, yeah.
Yeah, but as an actor, to jump into something like that and be able to tell that story, I just thought it was a massive challenge. I loved it.
And, I mean, did it ever kind of, because obviously we know that people take, especially soap, really to heart. I mean, did part of you worry about the reaction? Because obviously everyone, you know, does kind of almost take the person to be a bit, I find with people that play bad characters, like, oh, well, they can't be smoke without fire. Nina Wadia said,
yeah.
People were like, well, you must be a bit like her. So, I mean, was it, did that occur to you? Do you know what I mean, that how your public perception could be and what you'd have to cope with?
I probably had some reservations. I mean, generally, I mean, either I'm just weird, but I didn't even think much about what the reaction would be, because I was just, my main goal was to go in there and tell a story and tell it as truthfully and honestly as I could. I think during when I first started, I'd come home on the weekends and everyone was saying, are you not worried about the reaction? Are you not worried about social media? And I didn't even think about that. But then I think as it was developing, of course, I was getting a bit of trolling on Instagram and I was getting weird messages, but they just want a reaction from you. So I didn't really partake in any of that. But I mean, probably a little bit of me was a bit like, oh, what am I getting myself into? But generally, I just ran with it. I just thought, let's just do it and see where it goes.
What's so brilliant about Hollyoaks doing it is, obviously, it's aimed at a much younger audience. So I think the storylines, it's great. It's important to get them, as we know, with all the heavy storylines in every soap, it really is take home for people, and especially in Hollyoaks, to deal with. But I guess it must be really, I mean, I've directed Hollyoaks as well, but didn't do anything too heavy on it. But I guess it was really hard for all of you involved as well, because it obviously goes out at 6:30, which is way before the watershed. So to do something like that is quite hard, I suppose, in what you can insinuate and what you can show.
Yeah. I mean, I thought they did a fantastic job, because it's not an easy slot to get in this sort of controversial stuff. But what I thought they did brilliantly, particularly for that storyline, I mean, if you've got families at 6:30 discussing grooming, that sort of abuse, then that's a good thing that those dialogues are taking place in people's living rooms up and down the country.
Yeah, no, incredible. I think that's the thing. And it was actually, I think I'll be right in saying it was inspired by the ex-footballer Steve Waters. He appeared on the Derbyshire show, where he revealed basically that him and then a lot of other people came out that he went through this and was groomed, and that kind of instigated Hollyoaks to do it. I mean, how was it working with, obviously, the guy who played Ollie? You know, was it, did you build up a kind of, I mean, I just it must be a weird scenario to go into. I mean, obviously, we know it's acting, but I mean, did you feel quite protective of him? Because obviously being younger and doing a storyline like that is quite heavy going as well.
Yeah, I mean, Aidan, who played Ollie, I mean, he was at my screen test and I didn't know at the time that he was playing that part. So we kind of bounced really nicely off each other. So it wasn't until I got on set and I realized he was actually playing that character that was phenomenal. And he was a brilliant little actor. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
But of course, we let's not forget, at the time we were doing that, he was 17, I think. He was about to turn 18. So that was really young to take on that. But what he did do, I mean, he came to it with such a mature understanding, and he really handled it so delicately, professionally, and we got on so well. Like, we literally we had a great time together. I mean, it was sometimes thinking about there was very few scenes where we got physical, because obviously because of the time and his age. There was one scene I had to massage his legs. I was a bit like, all right, okay. And because we could only do below the knee.
Obviously. And again, it's still quite an uncomfortable thing to do as an actor, isn't it, anyway? I mean, I suppose if you have that relationship, it's really good as well, because I think that finding that, I know the actress who's just been doing the domestic abuse storyline, and Corey was like, thank God we got on, because, you know, you can, thank God you can, unlike the four people that go through this, you can leave it at work, at least.
Yeah.
Because it can really, mentally affect you, I should think, doing a storyline like that as well.
I mean, bless him. He used to come up to me between takes sometimes and be like, are you okay with that? Are you okay with that? Like, thank God. Never mind me being okay. Are you okay with this?
Yeah,
you
know,
this old queen rubbing your legs like on set. Like, are you okay with that? But he was so, honestly, he was so grown up about it. It was great.
Well, and I'm sure you'll agree, Hollyoaks is great. I mean, it's such a nice family atmosphere again there. I mean, how is it for you going in? Because obviously, you're really old to be in Hollyoaks. And I felt really old directing there. I mean, how was it working within a company that's full of youngsters? I mean, did you find it different than all the other jobs you've done?
Yeah, I mean, I'd never, ever worked like that before. But I can only sort of liken it to starting school. And because the cast is huge, I think there's maybe 60, 70 in the cast. It's quite a big cast. And I remember turning up. And it's almost like, you know, when you're in school and you're just trying to find your home within a group. And because you can't get to know everyone on a show like that, because A, you don't always work together with everybody. And you kind of stay in the scenes that you do with your sort of TV family. You kind of stick with them. But it was difficult getting around everybody, but the youngsters, I mean, honestly, like, I mean, I was, you know, I'm in my 40s and they made me feel really young because my sense of humor is a bit wild and you know, saucy. And we used to have so much fun. They were wicked. And also, I mean, there was the older, sort of more experienced Hollyoaks actors that I grew up watching, like, you know, Ashley Taylor Dawson, Sarah Jane, who plays Mandy.
Who bizarrely are like the mum and dads there, aren't they? I mean, they're kind of, on other soaps, you know, you've got the Liz Essenstein and, you know, Duncan Preston, whatever, and they've almost taken that role because they've been there the longest. It's bizarre that they're only like late 20s.
I mean, of course, this season pros on that show because they've been doing it for so long. But, and you know, like Gary Lucy, like he's been in it for a long time and who I get on really well with. But I just really love getting to know all those guys because I think when you grow up watching people, because I watched all those for years, it just felt really special that I was doing something alongside them as well. Does that make sense?
I totally get that. I think listeners to this will probably think, oh, if you're an actor or a director, you get used to meeting not just famous people, but, you know, I'm the same. If you're working with people that you really respected, not just because they're famous, but, you know, like Gary was involved in obviously that really heavy gay, the male rape story on years ago. But
And
then you get to work with them. I remember working with Lacey Turner for the first time and being quite nervous because you're like, I'm so in awe of what you do. And then she was so nervous working with a new direction. You're like, oh my God, how funny. I'm no one. I think that never goes away in our job, does it? Whenever you join a new
job,
and it's like a first day at school again, isn't it?
I remember I had, it was the first time I'd done a scene with Gary and Sarah. And it was our first sort of, we were in their flat and there was the three of us doing a scene. I think Ollie was involved in it. And I was terrified because obviously I felt like I'd known these actors for years because of having watched them. And I was like, oh my, this is just like surreal because I'm now stood on a set talking to them. And we did get very friendly. It was just a weird experience.
And then what was it like? It must have been amazing because obviously, you know, you weren't in the show a long, long time. And then you obviously win a soap award for the year you're in there. I mean, that must be incredible.
I never in my wildest dreams did I ever expect to walk away with not only a nomination, but also an award. I mean, that was just silly, you know, who am I like? But it was an absolute honour to walk away with that because I just felt the storyline had actually felt like it had an impact on everyone. And it just made me think, oh, we did the job well, and people they acknowledged it, and we did a service to the people watching it and telling their story because ultimately that's what we were doing.
Yeah, and I think when you win an award at the Soap Awards as well, you feel like you've almost done it for the show as well, don't you? It's kind of a very unselfish thing, the awards at the Soap Awards. I think you feel like you're winning on behalf of everyone, I think, when you win there.
Yeah, because I remember that particular year, 2019, it was a pretty good year for Hollyoaks because I think they walked away with four awards that year and the coveted best soap. So I think it was a vintage year that year for them because I think it was well deserved because, you know, they do throw out some really good groundbreaking storylines, I think, for Half Past Six. And it was just nice that they got the recognition they deserved that year.
Well, I think the competition is good for all of them because it keeps them all on their toes. I mean, I remember my first awards, it is the most bizarre night, isn't it? Because I think I was working on Emmerdale, I hadn't worked on any of the others, and you kind of arrive and you see like June Brown and, you know, the Corrie cast. I remember making the speech and just looking out going, oh my, it's like everyone I've watched on television for years.
Oh,
and it's
totally
so scary, isn't it? And
I remember,
kind of feel like, I don't belong here.
I remember my first Soap Awards was 2018. That was the first, because I've only been to the two, obviously, but 2018. And I hadn't been on screen that long, but I obviously we all had to go. And I remember because it was in London that year, and we went to some big town hall. I think it was in Lambeth. We went to some town hall for the after party,
right?
And I just remember walking around and like just people that I'd seen on TV for years and years. And I'd had a couple of sherries, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, well, and, everyone has, yeah.
I was just like waving at people and having a little chat with them while we were queuing at the bar and like, you know, asking, oh, how are you? Did you have a good night? It was mental, absolutely mental.
It was mental. Did they still stay in that the big corner hotel in Kensington?
I think the hotel I stayed in was the W.
Oh, okay. Oh, they must. Oh, right, in Shepherd's Bush, yeah, okay. We used to
that was quite
the hotel
plush.
And the whole hotel used to be overtaken. Obviously, the press used to all be baying outside, waiting for someone to come out and be sick or to come and snog.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be from our soap, but yeah. Memorable years, those Soap Awards. I mean, oh my God. So then you went back last year as well. What kind of how did that come about?
Just out of the blue, really, because when we did the trial week, I thought that's me done now. He's gone to prison. I never expected to be asked back like months later, because I think, it was almost not a year had passed, I think. And then my agent called me and said, Hollyoaks, they want you back for two episodes. And I was like, oh, great. I had no idea what they were revisiting. As it turned out, Brody was having flashbacks. So he wanted to come and visit me in prison. I thought it was quite nice to revisit it, sort of, you know, for two episodes. I was just blown away that they wanted me to go back.
That's amazing. It shows the power of your character and how good you were. But okay, so what was your, who do you think at Hollyoaks was your favourite character?
My favourite character?
Yeah, not actor.
Well, I've got to say, I had a little soft spot for Marnie. The great Lizette Anthony. Marnie's character, I mean, she used to crack me up because just some of the things she used to say, and she was so posh. And of course, when they put Buster and Marnie together, they were like chalk and cheese, and it was great.
Amazing, yeah. And that's what's great as well, especially Brian Kirkwood is amazing at bringing in those TV faces from the past as well who you want to work with. I was there when Gillian Telford came in.
Oh, lovely, yeah.
And I hadn't worked with EastEnders at that. Oh, no, I had, but I obviously then worked with her in EastEnders. But yeah, incredible. You're kind of like, oh my God. And that felt really surreal because Gillian was Kathy Bill. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, what's she doing in Hollyoaks? This is really weird.
Oh, she chatted to me at the, after I'd won the award, we went to a party somewhere in Manchester because it was in Manchester that year. And she was at the after party for the Hollyoaks crew, and we chat. I mean, it was just a very small chat, but she was so lovely. Like, she was like, oh, well done, oh, brilliant, well done. It made my night, that did.
I know, yeah. That's Hollyoaks, which is amazing. So just a few things about you to end with. So what I loved reading was you had a job interview once at Buckingham Palace to work for the Queen.
Yeah, I did.
What was that for?
That was so funny. Okay, so I grew up in a pub in Wales, and I was bored. I wanted the big bright lights of London, paved with gold, and I just had to get out of where I lived. It was just so boring. And because I had catering experience, I was just applying for every job. There was a magazine used to be called, might still be around, called The Hotel and Caterer.
Right.
And there was a job in the back, Buckingham Palace. The original job I went for was footman to the Queen.
Wow. Oh, my God. I mean, go straight in there.
So I applied for it and they said, oh, they asked me to. So the letter came with the royal crest on and we opened it. My dad was so excited and I went to London. So I went dressed in top man finest and I turned up and they give me a tour of the palace and where I'd be staying.
Where are we going to be staying?
Well, originally I would have been in the Buckingham Palace in the kitchen, sort of where all the catering staff live.
That would have been amazing. I mean, can you imagine? Where do you live? Buckingham Palace.
I know, right? And they said, you can have people stay, but they've got to be security checked and all that. And they said, oh, sometimes you might have to go to Balmoral. You might have to go on the Royal Yacht for
part of the year. Oh, my God.
I was like, oh, well, I'm not sure about that.
I love they advertise that in a magazine. And also imagine you have someone back and they have to be security checked. I mean, that would play havoc with your love life in London.
I know, back. Yeah. Can you imagine Buster Smith in Buckingham Palace? Who'd have thought?
That's amazing. That's incredible. And then the other thing I love about you is you present a radio show with another TV legend, Carol Vorderman from Wales.
Oh, Dame Vorders.
Dame Vorderman. And she's incredible. How did that come about? I mean, you're a man of many bows to every arrow.
Well, pure accident and fluke that was. So I was asked to go in just after I'd won the award, and they said, oh, will you come in and have a chat? It's her first Saturday show. I was like, yeah, great. So I went in, we had a little chat about the award and soaps and all this. And then I got dragged into her question of the day, because she does this question of the day every week. And I think she asked me what weird gadgets have you got in your house? And I said, I was in love at the moment. At the time, I had this mop that just, it was this amazing mop, used to press up and down. And it was just incredible. I was, that's how exciting my life is in Cardiff. I'm sort of dribbling over a mop.
But Doug, before you continue, I got a steam mop last week. So yeah. My mum bought me a steam mop and I was literally over the moon. So I've cleaned
it. I know, it's crazy, isn't it? I know. The older you get, these gadgets you fall in love with.
You said to me 10 years ago, you'll be excited. I killed myself, but yeah. So go on, sorry. So yeah.
So we were chatting about this and we were just having a bit of banter and we were just making fun of each other. Anyway, I left and on the way home, the producer phoned me and said, oh, thanks for coming in. Great interview. I've got a little proposition for you. Would you be interested in co-hosting with Carol for a couple of shows? And I was like, what? And I said, look, yeah, sure. I said, well, I'm an actor, but I said, never presented. But I said, sure, I'm sure I can give it a go. And they booked me for about 3 shows. And nearly 2 years later, I'm still there chewing her ear off on a Saturday and having loads of giggles.
That's amazing. So Dame Vorderman asked for you. You are the Holly and Phil of Wales Radio.
Oh, I tell you what, we are.
The radio is great, I think. It's like this podcast because you can look like death, but you can still pretend that you're full of the life. It's amazing, isn't it?
I love it. I love it for that.
So we're going to end with, you've done so much other stuff. You've done loads of other shows. And I thought I'd end with quizzing you whether you can remember who you played in these shows.
Okay.
Now, normally everyone gets it wrong because most actors kind of remember, you know, it's like you learn a page of script and once you've done it, it goes. So
yeah,
you were in Casualty as?
Oh, Chris Albright.
Yes. Oh, well done. Doctors?
Oh, Mark Illingworth.
Yeah. Oh, you're good at this. Oh, my God. Emmerdale.
PC Colin Brown.
Yeah, oh my God, you're very good. I think I might have been there at that point. I'm not sure whether I could have actually
really?
You. I remember PC Brown. What stories was PC Brown involved in?
Well, PC Brown, my first time there playing that role, it was with, oh, I can't remember the character's name now. Her little boy went missing. Oh, what was her name? Alicia?
Oh, yeah, with Jacob, yeah.
He went missing and I was going in. I went in to question them on his whereabouts. And then the second time I was in there was, you know, is it Chrissy from Home Farm?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She'd been arrested for something.
Yeah. See, and that was my time. I wonder whether we actually crossed paths because
maybe.
I remember the PC's name. I know. But amazing. So, well, listen, it's been so good to talk to you.
Thanks.
About Hollyoaks and It's a Sin. I mean, both great shows and lovely to meet you and friends for life now, Nathan.
Oh, definitely.
So thank you very much. And obviously enjoy the rest of lockdown. And let's hope our paths will cross in the future.
I'm sure they will.
Thanks so much, mate.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Nathan Sussex for being one of my final guests on Soap in the Box Season 2. I can't quite believe it. I'd like to put a massive thank you out there to all of my guests from Soap and from TV who've come on the podcast, given up their time and taken a trip down memory lane with me. It's been incredible. And I know you've enjoyed it and it's amazing to get your feedback. Please keep in contact with me still on social media at Soap from the Box on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'm planning Series 3 as we speak and you can still catch up with me on the A to Z of Soap on Great British Radio every Saturday at 3 o'clock. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you to David Stevens and the Bothy and Ian McCallum for all of their help on the series. Have fun, stay safe, and I'll see you very soon.